morning, Your Honors. My name is Rich Bolton. This is a Social Security Disability Appeal. The court, no doubt, is aware, and it will be emphasized, no doubt, by the Commissioner that the standard of review in these cases is rigorous. It's whether or not the decision, in this case by the administrative law judge, which was adopted by the Commissioner, is supported by substantial evidence. But while the standard of review is easy to state, the court has also attempted to institutionalize the process of reasoning, both to assist the court in reviewing the decisions of the administrative law judge, but also to force the administrative law judge to engage in a process of reasoning, a substantive process of reasoning that will avoid, in these cases, an element of arbitrariness, so that the decision in one case can be compared to the decision in another case, and you can see where, in fact, the decisions are both coming from. In this case, we feel that the administrative law judge failed to apply that process of reasoning by what the court has called laying bare the link between the evidence to the court's conclusion. Particularly in this case, we've noted that both in the medical record that was submitted and in the testimony that was elicited at the hearing in this proceeding, including from witnesses that were subpoenaed by the administrative law judge to give evidence, there was evidence that the claimant in this case, Mr. Johansson, had a variety of moderate limitations that were noted under the mental residual functional capacity form, both that was previously filled out and submitted as part of the case by a medical consultant engaged by the commissioner, and also by a witness that was called by the ALJ, Dr. Kent Burney. What's significant about the limitations that and they're cited in the brief at page 3 and 4, and they relate to fairly significant limitations in terms of functional limitations on the ability to carry out and work a full day, to carry out instructions, to maintain concentration and whatnot. Now, the expert in this case indicated that those limitations were moderate, which on cross-examination, Dr. Burney quantified to mean that the claimant would have difficulty performing the various tasks 25% to 50% of the time. The administrative law judge, in his decision in this case, does not speak to that testimony at all, which was very significant because the ALJ also called as a witness a vocational expert, a Mr. Leslie Goldsmith, who testified that, in his opinion, someone who had the moderate limitations that Dr. Burney had testified to, 25% to 50% of the time, that that person, that those limitations at that level, as quantified by Dr. Burney, would eliminate competitive sustained employment for an individual. This evidence was very significant, and it's completely ignored in the administrative law judge's opinion. There's absolutely no reference to it at all. I think this is a classic instance where what the court has said, particularly the court has said, we're not requiring that the administrative law judge recite and critique every piece of evidence, but particularly the most important evidence that may contradict the ALJ's ultimate decision, that in order to sufficiently engage in that process of reasoning from evidence to conclusion, that you have to at least discuss the key evidence that may contradict the ALJ's decision, and in this case it's completely unnoted by the ALJ, and as I say, it's very significant because if you reason from the evidence of moderate limitations to the vocational effect, it would it would make the conclusion by the ALJ unsustainable. I think there were other instances in which the ALJ similarly failed to engage in a meaningful process of reasoning. Much of the decision in this case was based on the ALJ's fairly conclusory statement that Mr. Johansson's medical symptoms and his pain and its restrictions were inconsistent with his reported daily activities. And the ALJ, and I would admit that the ALJ in many respects is fairly, other than on the mental residual functional limitations, the ALJ does a pretty good job, I believe, of reciting the evidence. But the conclusion then from the evidence that the daily activities are inconsistent with the reported pain and level of restrictions is simply not supported by substantial evidence. There's not, other than saying these level of activities are inconsistent with a certain medical level of pain, there's no explanation for why the ALJ believes that to be the case. But if and as we've noted both in the written record and the testimonial record that was before the ALJ, the level of the daily activities by Mr. Johansson in this case was practically sedentary. And so,
is that how he could exercise on the treadmill?
Pardon me?
Is that why he could exercise on the treadmill?
Well,
does that refer to someone who is sedentary?
Well, what I would note there is that, first of all, the statement that he did that on a regular daily basis was not supported by the record. The record indicated that he would do that when he was able to, and in
that
many
was his own testimony, wasn't it?
Pardon?
That was his own testimony.
That's correct.
That
but
he could exercise on the treadmill, and that he could
on some occasions.
The oil
that's
on
correct. And what he said, but and Your Honor, I would take the position, as I believe this court has on other occasions, that the fact that someone does not have to be comatose to be disabled. Here, the individual, the testimony, even if we accept the testimony that he walked on the treadmill for 1 mile each day, I believe. If we accepted that as the absolute uncontradicted,
then he could carry papers, couldn't he?
Pardon me?
He could carry papers as a contract carrier.
He could carry papers.
Right, as a contract carrier, as they now do to deliver papers. There's a lot of jobs in the economy that someone can do if they can work out for a whole mile on a treadmill.
Well, the testimony was, to walk for 10 minutes on a treadmill is I think substantially, I don't believe that that level of activity is inconsistent with the reported level of pain and disability. I would note also, Your Honor, that in fact is the only testimony or the only evidence by any of the medical individuals that the medical consultative evaluation that the commissioner had done.
Changing the oil in his car?
Pardon me?
He had no difficulty changing the oil in his car and doing things like that.
Well, I don't think he testified that he had no difficulty doing that, and he said he did that on one occasion. And I think what you're suggesting here is if an individual attempts to do anything, that the attempt to overcome disability is inconsistent with the conclusion of
a good
disability.
He didn't say I couldn't do it. He said I could do it, and that he could perform light housework.
And that he could
what? He could perform light housework.
Well, and again, Your Honor, I suspect that and this is a point where Your Honors will certainly be the deciders, but I don't believe that the level of daily activity that is recited, particularly if you look at the context in which the standard is whether or not a reasonable person would reach the same conclusion. And if you, you know, you pull out, did in a period of 4 years, he did this on one date and he did that on the other date. First of all, as I said, I don't think those activities are inconsistent with the disability. But if you look at the testimony of the witnesses, and if you look at the questionnaires that they submitted and whatnot, and look at all of the evidence, I think the conclusion that the daily activity—I mean, the daily activity of this individual was very very modest. And I would also note that the individual was in medical treatment for really constantly for the full years, for four full years prior to his hearing, or three. I think it was about four full years, and none of the doctors questioned or indicated that his daily activities were inconsistent with reported pain activity, except for the one, and that was the only noted statement. Was the one statement by the consultative reviewer indicating that he walked on a treadmill for a mile each day. And that's the only evidence that the daily activities, that the doctors consider the daily activities inconsistent with his reported pain. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bolton. Ms., is that Sanu?
Sena. Good morning. My name is Mary Sena, and I represent Joanne Barnhart, the Commissioner of Social Security. As counsel has pointed out, the standard of review that the court must keep in mind is the substantial evidence standard of review. And what that means is, if looking at the entire record, no reasonable ALJ could find that this claimant could perform a significant number of jobs existing in the economy, then the court should reverse the decision. But as long as the record in totality supports what the ALJ concluded, the court is required to affirm our decision. In this case, we have a 40-year-old man who complained of back pain, neck pain, anxiety, and depression. Several doctors treated him for his complaints of back and neck pain, and three of those doctors agreed that he could perform at least light work. Dr. Olson was the only doctor who concluded that Mr. Johansson could not perform light work. And what he said was he couldn't lift more than 10 pounds. According to our standards, light work requires generally consists of lifting and carrying up to 10 pounds frequently, and occasionally lifting and carrying 20 pounds. So the difference between what Dr. Olson found Mr. Johansson could do and what the other doctors and the ALJ found Mr. Johansson could do was the difference between being able to lift 20 pounds frequently and never being able to lift 20 pounds. So the question before the court then is whether no reasonable ALJ could find that this person could occasionally lift 20 pounds. With regard to the testimony by the experts at the hearing, Mr. Johansson makes much of the fact that Dr. Burney talked about some moderate limitations in his mental functioning, and from that there was some questioning of the vocational experts whether a person who was completely incapable of performing these activities 25% to 50% of the time would be able to perform a significant number of jobs. And what the vocational expert said was, no, there wouldn't be a significant number of jobs that this person could do. And plaintiff tries to link that testimony to Dr. Burney's testimony that if he was required to quantify a moderate limitation, he would say that an individual would have difficulty in a given area of functioning 25% to 50% of the time. So there's a leap of logic there that the ALJ wasn't required to take. And although Mr. Johansson seems to think that this testimony is significant and the ALJ shouldn't have ignored it. It's only as significant as it's only significant if you attach the reading to it that Mr. Johansson has attached to it. And the fact that the ALJ did not look at the evidence in this light does not mean that he ignored that testimony altogether. What the ALJ looked at was Dr. Burney's testimony that Mr. Johansson had anxiety, he had depression, he stated that he became irritable at times, that he had problems with concentration, and Dr. Burney said he has some moderate limitations in this area. The ALJ created a very specific RFC finding that reflected those complaints. He said that Mr. Johansson was limited to simple, repetitive, routine, unskilled, low-stress work. And he included those limitations in his hypothetical question to Mr. Goldsmith, which he ultimately relied on in drawing his conclusion that Mr. Johansson could perform a significant number of jobs existing in the economy. In light of this evidence, again, the commissioner says that a reasonable ALJ could conclude that this record as a whole supports the ALJ's conclusion. We would like to briefly address the discussion regarding Mr. Johansson's daily activities. Contrary to his assertion, the commissioner or the ALJ did not rely exclusively on his daily activities. He did not rely predominantly on these activities. Again, he looked at the record as a whole, and in light of the record as a whole, these activities also denoted a person who was not completely and utterly disabled. In sum, we have a very specific RFC finding that contemplates a 40-year-old man with depression, anxiety, and back and neck pain. And unless the court finds that no reasonable ALJ could find based on this record that Mr. Johansson couldn't perform the jobs enumerated by the ALJ, we ask the court to affirm our decision. Thank you.
Well, your time has expired, but you may have a minute if you have anything you feel you must add. All right.
Let me just address the issue of the mental functional capacity limitations. The question that I think the administrative law judge needed to answer in this case, and this court has been very precise, that the reasoning of counsel cannot substitute for the reasoning of the administrative law judge. That evidence was critical, and it was unremarked upon by the ALJ. At the conclusion of that hearing, and when that ALJ decision comes back, my client says, how come that testimony that with these moderate limitations I wouldn't be able to work in a sustained competitive employment situation, how come that wasn't persuasive? I can't answer that question to my client because the administrative law judge didn't answer that question. And in all honesty, I don't think the question has even been answered by counsel.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.